Welcome to Ellie Chat. Your home for exclusive news and commentary on the internet's only podcast about candlepin bowling. Brought to you by the Lords of Candlepin, Frank DeLuca and Rich Lamoni. Email the show at alleychat.frankface.net. Now broadcasting from the heart of the Bay State, the host of Alley Chat, Frank Face.
Hi everyone, welcome to Alley Chat. My name is Frank Face. We have a very, very special show for you this evening, or whenever you're listening to this. I'm joined with my co-host, as always, Kyle Bruce, and we have a very, very special guest. This is Liz Moore. She's the executive director of the ICBA. Liz, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. We're very thrilled to have you here.
That we are.
And this is kind of unlike anything else we've ever done.
Well, you said that tonight is a special show, but every show is special.
Is that because I'm a part of it or you're a part of it?
I have nothing to do with this.
Okay. Well, Liz, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're the newest executive director of the ICBA. That's the International Candlepin Bowling Association, for those who don't know. And you've been involved in bowling for
15 years.
Okay, very good. And tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are.
Well, I grew up in Needham, and I was an art student. And I actually ended up going to the Museum School of Fine Arts. And I was working at this little art store in Needham called the Art Emporium. It happens to be located right next to the Needham Bowlaway. The Needham Bowlaway was being sold right around the year 2000. And I was pretty good friends with the previous owner, Al Wallace. And I got to know Scott Moore, who was the new owner of the Bowlaway, and I started working there. And that's how I got into the bowling business.
Okay. And from what I understand, that you kind of might have been involved in turning that place around in terms of
we were pretty much running the place together for the whole time we had it, and fixed it up again, cleaned it up. We started with a pretty nasty, old, run-down place. The previous owner was ready to retire. And we fixed it up, modernized it, and it became actually the best of Boston in 2004. We had waits for lanes that were hours long. There were lines going out the door and around the corner. And it was doing really well for a while.
Great. And, you mentioned waiting for lanes. That's something you kind of don't see anymore. It just almost doesn't happen.
Unless you're at Socko's.
Well, yes, of course.
And you're serving flatbread pizza.
Well, I mean, you can't go wrong with flatbread pizza.
We used to have waits very similar to Socko's in Needham. Yep.
And how big of a house is Needham?
It's 8 lanes in the basement.
Okay. Very good. Did you have any kind of amenities like that? Any kind of food?
No, we just had bowling.
It was just to be.
We were one of the first places in the area to put in cosmic bowling.
Oh, okay.
And we had a really good sound system. So when you went into Needham, it sounded like you were in a nightclub.
Great.
Well, I think that's something that only adds, you have that special appeal when you're, bowling and you have the average white band. Again, another average white band reference.
Well, it's the best bowling music you can get.
I know it. Twice in one day. So one thing that I think is very interesting about you personally is that you're someone that watched bowling with your grandmother, right?
Yes.
When you're very young. And mm-hmm. Frank and I just, in one of our earlier segments, we're talking about that feeling that we would get as kids watching Channel 5 and such. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that that I think is a benefit to you, and I think we may have had this conversation before, is that the point I want to convey is that it's not a distance that you had. It's not like you weren't hardcore, but you had that frame of reference.
Right.
In the game,
Growing up, my grandmother was an avid candlepin bowling fan. She would watch the show religiously. I believe it was the Channel 5 show. And I remember seeing, when I was a kid, I was probably about 6 years old, I remember seeing Jim Barber bowling on TV while I was at my grandma's house, which is crazy because now I see him all the time at the ICBA meetings.
Right,
It's like, here I am, Jim Barber's in the room, it's kind of interesting. I was never really that into bowling as a kid. I really got into it when I got the bowl away with Scott. That's really when I started bowling and I started really getting into the whole candlepin scene. But I did have it in my background. And I even remember a point in time in high school when my father considered maybe we should buy the Needham Bowl away and, you know, you guys could work it, which was kind of funny because that's what ended up happening.
Hmm. I think that dynamic only serves to help you in the relationships that you have with proprietors and, you know, in the candlepin community today. That was the point I was trying to convey earlier.
Well, very well executed, Kyle.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's always, you know, done in the first take.
Of course.
You know? Because this is all live and we don't need any...
This is not the magic of radio or editing or anything like that.
But exactly.
Liz, could you tell us a little bit about maybe the goals of the ICBA? What is their direct relation with proprietors, with bowling centers, with the candlepin world in general?
The ICBA is it's there to standardize candlepin bowling.
Mm-hmm.
It sanctions lanes, standardizes the rules. It manages all the world records, things like that. But it also is there to foster goodwill towards the sport, to promote the sport. Anything that has to do with candlepin bowling, we want to promote it and help it and see it grow.
Okay, and you know, I guess one of the main questions, as one of the bowlers, I'm not on the business side. I'm just kind of doing what I do now, mostly because I'm injured, but because I love what we're doing here. The bowler's question, the general bowler's question, who really has absolutely no idea what the ICBA does, is, you know, they have some kind of figure in their some dollar amount in their mind, and they understand that you know this house pays X amount of dollars per lane bed to be part of the ICBA. And their, I guess, kind of ignorant question is, well, what does the ICBA do? Is there any kind of general response to that? You know, what do they get? The houses, the proprietors?
That's kind of a complex question.
Mm-hmm.
There's almost two questions there. What do they do? What does the ICBA do? And then what does the proprietor get? So that's sort of like a twofold question there, but there's actually more to it than just those two questions. As a proprietor, if you become a member of the ICBA, there are many benefits in terms of running a business. So it's like a business association. So anytime you come to our meetings, we exchange ideas, thoughts, you know, cross promotion ideas, tournament ideas, just general maintenance, like how to maintain your machines. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of like a information pool for a proprietor if they were to attend the meetings. But then on top of it, there's business perks. So because we're also a member of the BPAA, once you're a member of your state association, you're automatically you're a member of the ICBA. And once you're a member of the ICBA, you're automatically a member of the BPAA.
And what is, that's an acronym. What is
right,
BPAA?
So it's the Bowling Proprietors Association of America.
Okay.
It's a national association. They're mainly an association for 10 pin houses across the country.
Of course.
But they also cover candlepin, duckpin, and Canadian five-pin.
Five-pin, okay.
Yep. The ICBA also sanctions the lanes and the scores and everything. So if you're looking for a sport that's regulated and you want to make sure that it's equal and that there's a fair playing ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, you need to have a governing body that oversees that.
Of course.
Similar to baseball, football, any other sport has it.
PGA, golf, you know, anything
exactly.
Like that. Exactly. Yep, sure.
So the ICBA is that for candlepin.
And are also, you know, other equipment, is that inspected? Pins. How are pins sanctioned? Is it, you know, we know that there's, of course, Garland pins, and mm-hmm. I think there's like American Product Target pins, something like that. Is it kind of a blanket where as long as you purchase pins from one of these providers, that they are sanctioned, they're legal? Or?
Exactly. Okay. So there are certain industry people that work with the ICBA, and they are legally bound to producing a sanctioned product. They actually sign a document stating that this will be a sanctioned product. So anyone who makes candlepin balls, like, for example, Paramount, their balls are made to industry standards. So they will not make a ball that's not an officially sanctioned ICBA ball.
Mm-hmm.
Garland pins, they make official ICBA sanctioned pins. People who refinish the lanes, like JE Corporation and Gold Crown, they both know what the specifications are for when they either build lanes, refinish lanes, fix lanes, and they do it to ICBA standards.
Is there, you know, for a proprietor to be part of the ICBA, is it kind of a standard rate, or is there a different, you know, are there different tiers of membership, or?
There are different levels of membership. However, it's the same rate. So to become an ICBA member, you need to first become a member of your state association.
So MBA or in New Hampshire.
State. NHCBA.
Yes.
Because right. I used to get the NHCBA desk pen.
Oh,
yes.
Was it made by the Parker Pen Company?
No, that's Channel 5. I'm sorry.
Okay, well.
But if for some reason the proprietor either doesn't want to be sanctioned, or you know, the reason behind that would be if they need to fix their lanes so that they're sanctionable, maybe the proprietor doesn't see the value in being sanctioned, which I personally think being sanctioned is just bonus. Why would you not want to be sanctioned? But there are some people out there who don't want to be sanctioned, or they just don't. Maybe they cater to more of an entertainment audience. Not maybe they don't have leagues, or maybe they don't have tournaments. They just have kids' birthday parties all day. They may still want the benefit of the ICBA and the BPAA membership and the business aspect of it, but they don't necessarily need their lanes to be sanctioned. They can join at the same rate that every other house joins at, but they would only be a Silver Star member.
Okay.
Most of our houses are Gold Star members, which means they're sanctioned. We do have a couple houses that are Silver Star members, which means they're an ICBA house, but they're not sanctioned.
Okay. And I would only wonder why that would be the case, or why they would want to do that. But as you said, it could be just for entertainment purposes or something.
So. Exactly. It may just not make sense for them to go through the trouble of making sure their lanes are up to spec to be sanctioned. Mm-hmm. Sometimes for houses to be sanctioned, they need to do some work on their machines work on their lanes, and that's an added cost. And if this is a house that doesn't have any leagues or tournaments, maybe they don't want to have that added cost.
So they're seeking only kind of the business benefits.
The business benefits,
okay,
correct.
Very good. So,
couple things that I have from that. Can you elaborate on your last meeting with the BPAA? Because I understand you just went on you had a meeting with the BPAA. Can you elaborate on that and the experience with Nine Pin and how that's a little niche down in Texas?
Sure. So I was just at the BPAA meeting in Texas. They actually are based out of Arlington, Texas, which is right where the Bowling Museum and Hall of Fame is. Mm-hmm. And we had our board meeting there. I sit on the board. I'm a non-voting board member. And, you know, they discuss different things in their industry, in the 10-pin industry. And I'm a part of their discussions and try to help out where I can and give my two cents. While I was down there, we found out, me and Scott comes with me on my trips, my husband Scott.
Great, yeah.
We found out that there's 9-pin bowling in San Antonio area, which is south of Arlington. It's about 6 hours south. So we drove for 6 hours to go to this 9-pin bowling center down there. Mm-hmm. And all the 9-pin centers there are small clubs. And they use 10-pin style pins, and they use 10-pin balls. But they don't have any machines, so they use pin boys.
Okay.
And this one place, when they found out about candle pin, they were so excited about it, they actually ordered candle pins to put in. You know, it's easy for them. They just swap the pins out.
Of course, yeah, because there's no machinery.
Exactly. Yeah. So they started bowling candle pin in Texas. And so Scott and I went down there and sort of taught them how to bowl.
Wow. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I know it.
That's great.
I'm glad that we're talking about it.
Yes, indeed.
So the second part of my question is, you touched on lane, specification or what have you, and the importance of that, the regulations of a governing body in any sport, but especially, you know, the ICBA, we're talking about candle pin bowling. Can you talk about and elaborate on the process of confirming a record?
Confirming a record or submitting a record?
Submitting a record. Thank
okay.
you.
So so the process of submitting a record would be if you're bowling in an ICBA-sanctioned house in either a league or a tournament, and you feel that you've bowled a score that beats one of our previously recorded scores, you would need to report it to the proprietor immediately. The proprietor would need to sanction off that lane.
Mm-hmm.
hold the equipment aside, like the pins. He would also need, he or she would also need to hold the balls. They would need to contact their state association right away. The state association would need to contact the official lane inspector, who would then come out within 24 hours and measure the balls and the pins and the lane, make sure everything is up to snuff and matches the ICBA standards. And then it would be brought to the state level to be voted on. And if the state agrees that this passes and everything is kosher and, you know, meets all of the requirements, then they would pass that on to the ICBA level. Then the ICBA board of directors would vote it into being a record.
Is there a time, like you mentioned the 24 hours, is there a certain period of time in which the state association has to vote on this? And then if it passes, goes to the ICBA?
I don't think there's a time limit on their voting.
Gotcha.
Maybe the, so I'm assuming ICBA members, board members probably meet maybe quarterly or annually or something.
The ICBA board meets quarterly.
So maybe that's when they would take care of
that. The state associations typically meet monthly.
Okay.
So the time factor really is in getting the lane inspector out to inspect the lane and the balls. Mm. That's the real crucial time factor.
You understandably need to get it inspected. Because so many things can change in the course of even a day or whatever, you know. So
as long as that's done, then you can just wait until whenever the next vote is.
The next meeting, and then they'll discuss it. They'll bring it up for discussion at the state level. And once the state approves it, then they will send it on, forward it on to the ICBA level.
Is that, once that decision is reached at the ICBA level, is that your responsibility to communicate whether or not that record was yay or nay to the bowler that submitted the record?
Well, yes. I send out an official letter, either declaring it or telling them the explanation as to why it missed. Usually, like I just recently had this happen where I had to send out a letter for a score that was not accepted. I included the entire list of rules with it. I specified, you know, you missed on this rule, and this rule. I try to make it as clear as I can. You want to make sure that they understand why their score was not accepted. Unfortunately, it is a rule. So if you miss the rule for whatever reason, let's say the balls weren't weighed, it's in black and white. It's one of the rules that has to be met. If mm-hmm. it wasn't met, there's no physical way it can be sanctioned.
Right, because it doesn't comply with the aforementioned rules that have been standardized. Mm-hmm. So,
can you elaborate on, we know what the ICBA does. Well, we do.
You and I do.
Right. I'm sure you hear feedback on what are the biggest misconceptions about the ICBA that you hear in the feedback that you've gotten?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions, mostly because people don't understand what we do. It's kind of hard to say specifics. I do hear a lot of different points of view. Some people feel that, you know, we don't care. Some people feel that, you know, we don't need them. They don't need us, you know, things like that.
Sure.
But if you look at the big picture, what would candlepin bowling be without a governing body?
I agree.
It would disintegrate into skee ball. You know, I mean, how do you call it a sport if it's not sanctioned? I mean, how do you bowl in a tournament and not know if your lanes are long enough or if your pin deck is to the right specs? You know, I mean, it could just sort of slide down this slippery slope till you get to the point where it's no longer candlepin bowling.
Right. It could evolve into something totally different.
Exactly.
So.
Well, it's like the NFL without Roger Goodell, which actually, that was probably a poor analogy because right now that sounds pretty good, but.
Yeah, it would be like the NFL without proper pressure gauges. For footballs.
Exactly, ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Just
wow, that was a very timely reference. And, wow.
The report is out.
That's so. True, yes.
Yeah.
So,
and no one's getting fined, hopefully.
Right.
But right now, I'm my focus at the ICBA is to make sure that we all start working together again. I think that's another thing that's really important to have a governing body is to sort of be the glue that holds everyone together.
To unify, kind
of. Exactly.
And can you comment a little bit on how you plan on going about that and undermining it?
I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people. I've mm-hmm. been meeting with a lot of people. I just recently met with Lynn Thompson and Dave Chesterko from the USCBA.
Oh.
We're talking about possibly future in the future partnering with them. I've been talking with the Pro Series. You know, we've been trying to get people all on the same page. I've been having a lot of positive feedback. People want to unify. They want to work together. They want to work for the future of the sport. And, you know, this is, I think it's looking really positive.
That's good. And I think, you know, to comment on people wanting to do this, I think people are, you know, the bowlers are kind of seeing where this is going to go if we don't unify, if we don't kind of work together here. It's not looking good. So I'm really glad to hear that you're doing things like this. The USBTA or USCBA, that's Chester Copperpot.
Correct.
As Kyle likes to call him.
Yes. Well, he is.
I think they have a great concept. They're you know, I don't know what their membership is like, but Dave seems very organized. Mm-hmm. His head's in the right spot. He's got a great website to promote the thing.
Yep.
He's even got their own TV show like we're doing. Mm-hmm. And from my understanding, I think the money that they award their bowlers is probably from membership costs. May or may not be. But
I can't speak too much on how they work financially. But I do know that they have a great membership program for bowlers. They offer discounts. So if you become a member, it's like a yearly fee, I think. Mm-hmm.
And it's not very much.
No, it's not. I think it's like 25. Right. I don't want to be quoted on that. I'm not sure, but I think it's right around there. And you get a discount at certain bowling centers that mm-hmm. agree to be part of this program. So you get a discount on bowling. And I've heard rumors, I'm not sure, but I've heard that they have some restaurants participating as well. So, and they're talking about growing that program, maybe with some more incentives to it. So it's something that, you know, people should jump in on before it starts, the prices go up.
Right, of course. And this seems like, to me, it's kind of like the first of its kind. I don't think we've seen anything, you know, like an incentive, a bowling incentive program.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, I actually had this idea to do a bowling incentive program at mm-hmm. the ICBA level. And I brought it to a meeting, and I think it was Tim Lipke who told me that he thought they already had started working on one. So I reached out to Lynn, and we had a meeting, and we were talking about partnering on that. So that's going to be interesting in the future. We haven't come up with any details yet, but that's something that's going to be a lot of fun to work on.
Yeah, I'm glad you're at least exploring the possibility of doing that. So, again, we must emphasize the importance of kind of getting together and making a push for the game, for the survival of the game.
So. Yeah, we need to band together and work together.
Sure.
It's just strength in numbers. You know, the more people working towards the same goal, we're going to have better results.
I think there's an element of marketing and promotion that you really have a knack for. And I see that in the Turkey Bowl exhibition Thanksgiving. And I see that in with Jason Belmonte up in Maine. Can you elaborate on how both of those opportunities came down and how you exploited those opportunities?
Okay. Let's see. So starting out with the Turkey Bowl, my clock radio in the morning is set to WBUR, is it, I think?
ROR.
ROR. Yeah, WROR. Yeah. And they have Lauren and Wally on in the morning.
Of course.
And I was sort of half awake, half asleep in the morning, and I heard them talking about turkey bowling. And all of a sudden, I was like, wait a minute, they're talking about bowling. This should be Candlepin.
Of course.
So
that's how I feel about everything.
So then I started thinking, you know, if this isn't Candlepin, I'm going to be really upset. So I got onto Facebook and Twitter, and I started tweeting them and Facebooking them on their page. You know, I really hope your turkey bowl is Candlepin. If you need Candlepins, let me know. And I had no idea, but they got right back to me. And they said, we would love Candlepins.
Yeah.
Can you bring us some Candlepins? So that's what happened. I called up Ed Ganji over at Woburn Bowl.
Sure.
And said, you know, I heard a rumor you just got some pins. Could we borrow them for this event? And me and Scott went down to Woburn Bowl, picked up the pins, and then we went over to, what's the name of the rink, Scott?
I believe it's LeConte Rink.
The LeConte Rink.
Yeah, in Medford.
In Medford. And we went over there at like 5 a.m. and we brought in the pins, and they were broadcasting live on the radio.
Yep, on the ice, I think.
Which I normally would have been listening to from my bed.
But it was worth it.
And I got to go on the air and talk about Candlepin, and I started telling people on the radio about Candlepin bowling and how we've never had a 300 game mm-hmm. and, you know, all the facts. And it was really a lot of fun. And we set the pins up on the ice, and they started bowling frozen turkeys at the pins. And it was a lot of fun. There's actually a video of it on the ICBA webpage if anyone wants to see it.
Yeah, I remember seeing it, yeah. I would advise you to go check it out, all of our listeners.
Yes.
It's quite unique, and it's Candlepin bowling.
Indeed. Can you elaborate on ESPN and Belmonte and how that took place?
Well, there isn't really anything about ESPN yet. We went up to, actually Kyle was with us.
Yes,
I was.
We went up to Maine, and there was a PBA, which is the Pro 10 Pin Bowlers. They had a stop on their tour in Maine. And what happened, actually, start from the beginning, Mark Carrier, who is our championship, ICBA tournament championship bowler mm-hmm. from this past November, he messaged me on Facebook and said, I don't know if you know, but the PBA's in Maine. And I was like, yeah, isn't that 10 pin? And he wrote back to me, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but I love 10 pin. I grew up watching it. And I really want to meet Jason Belmonte. And I was like, all right, let's make this happen.
Yeah.
So I called up the PBA Tours promotional people in Chicago and told them what was going on and that we wanted to go out there. And they gave me the guy's cell phone number, which I tried calling. And, of course, he didn't answer. But he called me back. And it was like Saturday morning. He called me back and said, all right, can you be here at 4:30? And so I immediately got onto Facebook, and I said to Kyle, all right, let's go. We're going there for 4:30.
I remember that day.
And yes. I got on with Mark Carrier, and I said, okay, Mark, we got to go there for 4:30. Let's go. And we all hopped in our cars and went up to Maine. And sure enough, the PBA Tour was bowling, and it was crazy. They were filming it on ESPN, and there was a huge crowd there. And after the match was done, the PR guy called us down onto the lane to meet Jason Belmonte, and we got to go and take pictures with him. He signed pins, and we gave him a candle pin, and I asked him if he would bowl Mark in candle pin, and he was like, well, we gotta set this up right, you know, we gotta pre-plan this and set it up with TV and everything, you know. I think he really just wanted to practice.
Well, of course. Yeah. It's a totally different game.
Well, I thought it was a sterling exhibition of the two-handed
yes.
candle pin. I mean, that was outstanding.
Yeah,
that's probably why he didn't want to do it.
Well, I think the funny part, and for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, Jason Belmonte, on his own Facebook page, if I'm not mistaken, posted a video of him going to Westport Lanes, was it?
Yeah.
Great House.
Right down the street from where they were bowling 10 pin.
Right, right. And Belmo picked up a cannabis ball, double-handed it down the lane right yeah. into the gutter.
And then he said, I guess that doesn't work too well.
Yeah, he said, so, you know, he was kind of disappointed it didn't count.
Yeah.
Same rules, buddy. It doesn't count. 10 pin either, but.
Well, we could have done it better, though. We had the cameras that we have for classic cannabis pins. With
you?
Us. Oh, yeah.
We were prepared. We wanted yes. to get footage of this if they bowled together.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But they ended up not bowling that day. However, I did talk to some people at the BPAA level and brought up the idea of a Candlepin 10-pin tournament, and they loved the idea. And I've also just recently talked to, I forget what his position is in the PBA Tour, but he's one of the organizers of the PBA. And he loved the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that's in the works, and hopefully it will come to be maybe next season when they visit Maine next time. We'll see what happens. But that's definitely one of the things that we're working on.
Great. Well, I look forward to that. I hope that happens.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I want, if you don't mind, can you talk about the experience at that taping on ESPN, because
oh, yeah.
I thought that was something
it
that
was
is
incredible.
Totally
it was like
different from
anyone who's been to a Bruins game. You know how you have that feeling like you're at a rock concert?
Of course.
There's that excitement, that build up, the music, the crowd cheering, the loud music. They had that at the bowling match. It was incredible. They had a DJ. Loud thumping music. They had, the crowd was lining the lanes. So the crowd was actually standing on the lanes, on the adjacent lanes, lining the two lanes that they were bowling on. And they were cheering the whole time. I mean, it was like a party atmosphere. It was so much fun.
Was this DJ playing average white band music?
No. And if they did, they probably would have had double the audience, I think.
I would imagine so.
I know it. Well, I know we can give our feedback to the ESPN/Disney family. They yes. may, and the PBA, for that matter. They may look into that for next year. I think we should do that.
We are doing that.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, if we entice young people with beer and...
I think we should have a candlepin tournament that does that format. I mean, that would be crazy.
So this sounds to me kind of like maybe a stadium-type atmosphere.
Big time. Yeah. I don't know how long they've been doing it like that. I mean...
This is brand new. When I was at the BPA meeting in April, I mentioned it to a few people there, and they had never heard of it before. This was something brand new that they're trying, and they're trying the same stuff that we are. You know, they're trying to think of new, interesting ideas and concepts for bowling and try to get people really interested in the game again. And, I mean, that was a great idea. I think, you know, obviously there's a time and a place for the serious tournament or the serious league. But for fun, I mean, why not? You know, just do something different.
I think we need something like that because, I mean, even 10-pin. I mean, when I was a kid, I would... watch the Pro Bowlers Tour on ABC with Bo Burton and Chris Schenkel, and it was what we're all used to. I mean, the gallery would be huge.
Sure.
And, you know, they've been bowling all week, and that's the final. But it was always very professional. And when they carried it over to ESPN, it was the same sort of thing. I mean, I know that, you know, Pete Weber with his Oakleys and, you know.
Oh, yeah. He was the first, one to really start that whole rock star image.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for him to, like, hit somebody with a steel chair because they need, I think Belmonte tripled to win the match, if memory serves. Yeah. And his reaction was quite a bit animated.
Yes.
So I think that's, I mean, when you are in those BPAA meetings, do you think that's something they talk to the bowlers and say, like, look, when you are, especially when you're on television,
I don't know, because when I'm there, I'm at it's the BPAA, which is the Bowling Proprietors Association. So mostly what's discussed is similar to ICBA topics where we're talking about the industry.
Right.
There's a whole separate meeting of people for the PBA tour. You know, I'm not on that group.
Right. Well, I didn't know.
I don't know. You know, they could coach them. I'm not sure.
We were talking about the animated nature of the PBA bowlers and such, at least on, well, Pete Weber and then Belmonte when he threw the triple and how he was, you know, hard to tell if it was WWF, but he was certainly into it. And that's not something that we see. I mean, sure, you have some guys in candlepin that are, you know, they do get into it when they, you know, throw a double or what have you, or, you know.
That is true. I've never really seen any kind of like grudge type situations, though, where, you know, when someone's animated, it's because they've achieved something personally. They threw a triple strike. They threw a four back or whatever.
Right.
It's not like kind of in your face type thing, you know,
right.
Where I don't know if that's what this 10 pin event was like.
It wasn't in your face. No. But it was very much like a party atmosphere.
OK.
They had the teams sort of standing on the approach while one of them was bowling and they were sort of cheering each other on. You know, it was really interesting. And I mean, candlepin and 10 pin have a lot of similarities.
Of course.
You know, and one thing that I think we need to think about is it should be about having fun. If it's not fun, we're doing something wrong. You know, candlepin, just like 10-pin, is a game you play because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be maximizing that. And we seem to be kind of missing the boat a little bit. You know, we need to start creating some more fun events and tournaments and things that bring the fun back. I know that the ICBA has been talking about thinking, you know, some new tournaments in the future. Other than just the one we have in November, you know, that's sort of still in the thought process right now, but it's something we've been talking about, you know, bringing some more tournaments to the table.
So to touch upon the 10-pin industry, kind of capitalizing on the fun aspect, it's very hard not to notice that we're seeing locally within the Bay State area, you know, Boston area, New Hampshire, North Shore, South Shore, there are an abundance of 10 pin houses opening. Mm-hmm. Kings, Jillian's, you know, and these places have weights. And even Wamisit, that's going to be opening up in Tewksbury.
Which will have Candlepin in it.
Right, which will be a split house. Do you think that we will ever get to a point where we see a dedicated Candlepin house open? A new facility?
Sure, why not? Candlepin actually costs less to run and maintain than 10-pin.
Is that because of the, you know, the quality of, or the
Candlepins last for about 25 years. 10-pins have to be replaced about every year.
Every year or two, yeah.
10-pin lanes have to be oiled, which means you have to get like a $50,000 lane conditioning machine.
Right.
10-pin lanes have to have one mechanic for every, I think it's like eight lanes or something like that.
Wow.
Candlepin lanes can go all night without a mechanic on duty as long as you have them, you know, fixed the right way. I mean, you have to maintain your machines for them to run that well.
But if you do,
you can, like you barely clockwork. Need a mechanic at all just for occasional maintenance. You know, there's just the cost of running a candlepin center is so much less than running a 10-pin center. So from a business point of view, it makes more sense to open a candlepin house.
So that being said, what I've noticed is, you know, proprietors of candlepin houses seem reluctant to kind of upgrade their facilities. And even amongst casual bowlers, you know, if I'm on the street and I'm talking to somebody about bowling, candlepin bowling in particular, A, they're surprised that I'm talking about candlepin bowling. And B, they'll say, oh, candlepin, that's like old school bowling, right? And I think that kind of reflects on a lot of facilities and establishments that we see nowadays where these owners are just not willing to upgrade. Why do you have any kind of thoughts on why that is and what's their reluctance and what's the, I mean, do they realize that it's not benefiting them?
I think that's a little bit of a generalization.
Okay.
There are candlepin houses out there who are very modern.
Okay.
You know, I mean, go to any Ryan Family Amusements.
Oh, yeah
you know, sure. They're right up there. Boston Bowl Hanover comes to mind. Mm-hmm. They're one of the best places around, in my opinion, in terms of being modern. You know, there's other places that are not quite as modern as that, but they're pretty good. You know, they're really right up there. You're right. There are some houses out there that are still, you know, you feel like you walked into 1950 when you walk in the door, but they keep it very clean.
well, it, you know, in that in its own way, that can be very
it's charming.
Cool. It's great.
It's charming.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, like Candlewood has that aspect, I think. It's older.
Yep.
But it's not.
I don't think that the general public's perception of it being old school, I don't know if that has a direct link to these certain centers that haven't updated. I think it probably has more to do with our promotional efforts for Candlepin. If you look at 10-pin bowling, celebrities are bowling 10-pin. Kim Kardashian bowls 10-pin. You know, I mean, you see it everywhere.
Sure.
You can't get away from it. And to the general public, that's bowling.
Right.
Candlepin isn't out there like that,
partially
because it's a regional sport.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, part of it is just that we haven't really promoted it like in that way. I don't know if that's, you know, something. It's sort of like that's a route we may not want to take. It's something that it's sort of a complicated question because, yes, we do need to promote the game to make it stronger. But at the same time, I don't think we want to really lose the sport aspect of it where, you know, 10-pin is starting to go down that path where, like, Kings, that's not a sanctioned house.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You know, they have these huge entertainment facilities. They're just entertainment. They're not sanctioned bowling centers. They're losing the sport of the game.
Mm-hmm. I guess what that reminds me of is you're familiar with Irby Kafalis.
Yep.
We all are. He's great. He does great things.
I know Irby very well.
Of course. And he's written reports. He's actually participated in a program I'm going to talk about and ask your opinion on. It's called Better Off Bowling. Mm-hmm. Where
he's told me about it too.
Sure. And I don't know too much about it. I've read his articles. My understanding is it's a social league. Where, you know, it runs for like 6 weeks. And I don't even think you have to show up every week. It's just you show up, you're put on a different team every week. It's just to get people out there mingling, bowling.
From my understanding, it has to do with social media as well. It keeps track of your scores.
Yeah.
So you can log onto your phone on this app and you can actually see, you know, what scores you have and how you compare and rank to the other bowlers on the league.
Sure. So do you think Candlepin could benefit from this? And do you think proprietors are open to it?
I mean, that would depend on the proprietor.
Right.
You know, I think definitely Candlepin could benefit from that. Any new idea.
Sure.
Anything that's, you know, new and fun and interesting is great for the game. Proprietors, I mean, it's just, that's all on an individual basis, whether or not they want to do this or not.
Yeah, you can't force them, of course. But I just wonder if they kind of see the win-win situation. There's obviously a dollar amount that they'd be achieving. And just, you know, spreading the, well, I don't know how interested proprietors are in spreading the popularity of the game. I at the bottom line, they're business people. That's fine. But if you can get more people involved, they're telling their friends and, you know, and so on and so on. I just think programs like that could maybe take us back to where we, or at least lead us back to where we need to be.
I think that's something that would be great to bring up at the ICBA level. I think maybe most proprietors don't know it exists.
Okay.
So that's part of the problem.
Of course.
You know, I don't think it's that they're unwilling to do a program like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just that if they don't know it's out there, then they're not going to know to do it. It's something that, you know, if anyone has any good ideas like that, I know Irby has reached out to me with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, any other tournament ideas or anything, just let me know. You know, you can email me, Facebook chat me, whatever, and, you know, I can bring it up at the meetings.
Well, I will say, compliment. You've been very receptive to talking to the entire community, whether it's Facebook or email, whatever. You've been very active. And I have to, of course, praise that because I don't know that we've seen that in the past, really.
To be fair, in the past, they did not have social media for ICBA.
Yeah.
They just didn't know how to do it. And that's something that I'm very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with promoting things in the past. You know, so this is something that, this is my area of expertise, is with social media and computers and websites and things like that. So by giving the ICBA a Facebook page and a Twitter account, I've made it sort of easier to access us. You know, I'm always there. If anyone has any comments or questions, you know, just message me, post something on our page. I have it on my cell phone so I can see it like instantly.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get right back to you.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
As a proprietor, do you feel like it's most important to be successful in business if you have, do you need to have leagues? Do you need to have tournaments? Or can you survive on open bowling if the open bowling is fairly consistent 7 days a week? Which I know is easier said than done.
Oh, yes.
But there are, you look at Sockos, I'm pretty sure they don't have leagues or tournaments. But,
you know, it's funny, you know, that you pose the question that way, because I can tell you've never run a bowling center.
You'd be correct.
Yes.
Nor will I ever, probably.
It's actually the opposite. So the way it is right now is you need to have open bowling. You need to have parties, private parties, private events, birthday parties, corporate parties. That's your bread and butter. The leagues and tournaments maybe make up 20% of your business. That's it.
Hmm.
If you're lucky.
Wow.
In order to preserve the sport, you have to cater to the open public bowlers and the parties and the entertainment aspect of bowling in order to save the leagues and the tournaments. You're not going to make a lot of money off the leagues and tournaments.
Is that because they bowl at a discounted rate or?
Partially. It's partially because there just aren't that many league bowlers anymore.
Mm.
And this is across the board. I mean, this is 10 pin as well.
Okay.
It's just the way the nation is right now. People are more interested in entertainment. They're less interested in the serious, you know, league bowling.
Or physical activity for that matter. it seems as though people are just attached to their devices, their computers and stuff, their video games.
Yep.
They're not getting out there and being active and you know, participating.
That's part of the problem. Yeah.
So
perhaps bowling is like, you know, the, you know, a free market economy where you have ebbs and flows, and maybe this
I'm sure that's part of it.
You know,
we're in this spot right now where it's all about entertainment and having fun. Mm-hmm. You know, that's our society right now. We're focused on entertainment and having fun. And, you know, so things like tournaments and leagues, they're not the most popular part of the sport. Right now, the most popular thing might be glow bowling or, you know, parties where you bowl and drink, you know, things like that, like something at a King's.
Right. And maybe it's more the instant gratification because, you know, that entertainment and fun, you can have it, you know, you pull out your smartphone, you can, you know, stream HD movies on it within seconds.
Right.
And if, in order to be, in order to succeed in candlepin bowling, it's not something that you just pick up a ball and throw it as hard as you can. It requires a lot of work.
A lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of patience and diligence and study and mm-hmm. critique if you can get it. So I don't know how much that plays into the market, but it might play. Maybe it's a generational thing. I don't know.
So Liz, this past October, and if I'm not mistaken, the Hall of Fame induction for the ICBA takes place every 3 years or is it 2 years?
It's it depends on the year. They've been doing, I believe it was every 3 years this past couple of years, but it used to be every 2 years.
Okay.
There has been talk about making it 4. It kind of depends on how many people are available to go in.
Right, of course.
If you don't have enough people to go into the Hall of Fame, then they'll put it off. You know, they want to make sure the event is worthwhile.
Sure, of course.
You know, so this one, we actually had a lot of good people going into this one.
Well, yeah, Kyle and I were at this event, and I'd argue that it's probably one of, or if not the best class we've seen.
Well, it's certainly the most noteworthy because there are people that have dominated in our, you know, the generation that we watched when
right.
we were kids.
I right.
mean, anytime you have Olsta involved in anything, you know, you're doing pretty well. You're at the top, and Holbrook too.
Yeah.
So,
indeed.
I mean,
yeah.
we talked about that epic match in one of our other segments and, I mean, there's no doubt the class is loaded. Can you elaborate on the submission process for a potential inductee?
Sure. The form is actually right on our website. So if you go to candlepinbowling.com, there's a whole section on there for the Hall of Fame. And that's actually growing. I'm actually building a whole separate website as we speak for our Hall of Fame. So I was noticing that our Hall of Fame really kind of didn't exist anywhere except for maybe a printed out little booklet.
Right.
And that's it. I felt that wasn't really enough for our bowlers. The people who are in the Hall of Fame should be given a little bit more respect than just a little booklet.
Sure.
So we can't afford to build our own museum in a building.
Yeah.
But what I can do is I can build a website. So I'm dedicating an entire website to the Candlepin Museum and Hall of Fame.
That's great.
And I'm trying to collect as many artifacts and historical documents and, you know, scores and records and everything. I'm going to put it all on this one website, as well as all the Hall of Fame inductees, and it's all going to be in one place. It's going to be basically our equivalent to an actual freestanding museum, but it's going to be
virtual. Yeah,
right.
And what I've seen of it so far looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, what you've done with the website, you've totally turned it around. It just, you know, it looked like it was from GeoCities or something. like 1996 or something like that, or Lycos.com.
Correct. But, it came in one of those discs that came with Maximum PC magazine.
Yes, it was a
trial. That you got from News Shop.
But
you're at the mall.
Right. Yes. But CompUSA.
Yes.
But it looks fantastic now. It's modern. It's navigable.
Well, I have to give a little bit of that credit to Mary, who had the job before me.
Okay.
She was the one who started on the website project.
All right.
And her website, she actually had someone building it for the ICBA.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of started this look and feel. When I took over, I wanted to edit and update the website myself. So I had to recreate the whole website from scratch. I sort of took the same style that they had already created and I just put it into a new format. So mm-hmm. it was easier for me to update. So that's how that happened. I don't want to take all the credit where, you know, that was partially Mary's project. But back to the Hall of Fame, how you enter for the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. There's a document on the website. So it's a PDF file. You can download it. You can print it out. And it's basically a form you just fill out on who you want to nominate and why. But feel free to attach anything to that. Don't feel that you're restricted to that form. So you can attach newspaper clippings, score sheets. You know, if you want to type up something, you know, you can attach that. You know, don't feel that you're restricted to that one form. The other thing I can say is when we're looking at candidates for the Hall of Fame, we're looking for someone who was a great bowler across the board. Someone who was a great bowler in Maine, Massachusetts, Canada, you know, not just, you know, he was a great bowler in this one bowling center.
Understandable. Yep.
Yep. So.
So when you come across, I mean, there are, Kyle has touched on this before, this is not a very well documented game, you know, at least maybe now it is.
No, there, it isn't.
Well, agreed, but it's better than it used to be.
Oh, no doubt.
When you come across somebody who doesn't have stats recorded and, you know, somebody insists on nominating, you know, this person that they should be in the Hall of Fame, it's unfortunate that you, without justification, you probably cannot induct them.
That's not 100% true. If you can give specifics as to what made them great, you can back it up with, like I said, newspaper articles if you have them. Any sort of records of anything, you know, photographs, you know, just anything you can think of. It doesn't necessarily have to be scores. Of course, it's going to be a little bit harder without scores, course, you know, but if you can make your case, then there's no reason why you shouldn't submit that person.
And, you know, to touch on that, I wasn't before attending this last Hall of Fame award ceremony, which you did a fantastic job with in organizing and
thank you very much.
Promoting and the tickets and the invitations, everything. I wasn't aware that there were several different levels that you could be nominated for. There's competitive ability and...
There's two types. So there's competitive ability, mm-hmm. and then there's... now I'm drawing a blank on it.
That's okay.
Service, extraordinary contribution.
Contribution to the industry.
Right. Okay.
So basically, like, one would be if you develop a new pin setter, you know, you might be contribution to the industry. You know, competitive ability is like Tom Olsta, you know, because he's a great bowler. But then there's other things too. There's the President's Cup, which is selected by the president of the ICBA for someone who has done extraordinary service. This past year, Dan Murphy won the President's Cup Award. That does not necessarily, it's sort of like a separate category. Then there's the Stacia Czernicki Award, mm-hmm. which is given to a female bowler who demonstrates basically good sportsmanship, attributes such as Stacia Czernicki had, and has to be a great bowler as well. This past year, Lynn Thompson won that award. That one does not qualify you to be in the Hall of Fame. It's just a separate award.
Okay. And for to win either of those two awards, the President's Cup or the Stacia Czernicki Award, do you have to be nominated, or are those just kind of selected by board members? Or
you could put in your two cents and say, I think this person should get this award.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, it's going to come up to the board members to decide.
So it's a different kind of selection process.
It is.
Okay. Okay.
Very good. Can't wait for you to go in. I'll tell you that much.
To the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
That's not happening.
Well, I'll nominate you.
Oh, well, thank you.
When you turn 50, that'll be your present. What do you think about that?
It won't be for skill. It'll be for contribution to the game with this fantastic podcast.
Maybe be the Stacia Czernicki Award. Who knows?
Well,
yes.
By then, who knows? Very good.
So. I think there's a whole, like, I'm very excited about not only the future of the game, but I'm excited about the future that the next class, because I feel like there are I'm in disagreement with some people that have some stroke in this game, because I feel like there are some real big names that haven't been nominated yet. And I think it's just a matter of putting that documentation together. And I know sometimes it's easier said than done, because, you know, some of that has just been lost. But I think that's an exciting process, and considering if it's anything like the ceremony from last year, it'll be even better whenever the next one takes place.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because when you look at the bowlers right now, there's a lot of younger bowlers who are really good. And the ones that are older, a lot of them have already been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So there's almost a gap there. Like, we're almost in this waiting period for these great bowlers to get old enough to be inducted. So there's been some talk about, you know, maybe we should put the Hall of Fame off, you know, to 4 years just to sort of let some more time pass so we can have some more people who are nominated. But we'll see what happens.
Okay. So let's kind of veer off topic. But, you know, you mentioned the youth of the game. What does the ICBA have in store for the kids, you know, program, you know, in terms of television program where, you know, there's new gen, or even just bowling programs for the kids, leagues and tournaments and stuff?
Right now, the ICBA is very interested in getting bowling into the schools.
Okay.
We've worked with a company that produces bowling kits for the gymnasiums and schools. They have these for 10-pin bowling. It's like a foam ball. It's like a foam-weighted ball. And then the pins are plastic, like hollow plastic.
Sure, sure.
So the kids can bowl in gym and not get hurt, obviously, with real equipment. So I contacted the company that makes these and told them, you know, we do candlepin. We need some candlepin equipment. And they quickly got back to me, and they can produce it. So we have just recently got a price list for that. And, you know, proprietors can call them up. And usually what happens is the proprietor will purchase the equipment and donate it to their local school. And then in turn, the school will hopefully partner with the proprietor in some sort of league or after-school program or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. I think I want one for the house.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're soon to be fathers, Kyle.
That's true.
Yes, you could order it for your house.
Yes.
I can get you that information if you want.
Great.
It's also, we're also trying to get candlepin bowling recognized as a varsity sport.
Oh.
That's huge.
That is,
I think that's a real opportunity, I think, that you've exploited with the kids. And trying to get that on the map, you know, in the schools and having it be recognized.
This isn't really me. This is the ICBA members. They've really expressed interest in doing this, and they've, you know, they've really pushed for this. So this is a project that we're actively working on right now, and we're forming a committee for it, and we're, you know, we're really starting to bone up on our knowledge of what we need to do. There's certain requirements in terms of, you know, nonprofit organizations and things like that, that the schools will work with. And we need to get all our ducks in a row in order for the schools to recognize us.
That's great because, you know, not only did my parents got me into bowling, but I remember, you know, being a kid, my school had a league, my YMCA had a league, you know, just there were all types of kids league, after school programs, stuff like that. And I think that fostered my love for the game, not only just being involved with my parents and having friends within bowling, the community itself, but it was just what we did. It was what we did after school. It was that's how we had fun.
Yeah. And if you think about the future of the sport, kids don't do things that their parents don't do.
Right.
So,
of course.
I mean, you think about it. You probably played catch with your dad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You played baseball because your dad was into baseball. You know, you play softball because your mom's into softball. You know, you're playing the sports because your parents are doing it. If your parents or your teachers are not getting you into a sport, you're probably not going to do it as a kid. And then as an adult, you're probably not going to do it.
Right.
So for the future of the game, we really need to look into doing this.
All right, well, Liz, we hyped up your coming here for a couple of weeks at least, and one thing we can be thankful for is social media and websites and all that stuff, and we asked our listeners to submit questions for you. Would you be willing to answer some questions?
Of course.
Great.
Anytime.
Okay. So our first question, I'm not going to mention any names. I don't think I should. Our very first question Does the ICBA plan on creating an advertising campaign to try to market our game to new bowlers, young and old? The kids are the only future the game has to survive. How will you make them aware?
Okay. Well,
so we talked about this a little bit, but
yeah,
go for it.
Right now, I am working on a lot of low-cost social media-type advertising. The more member centers we have, the more of a budget we have for things like television ads and things like that. Right now, we're not doing anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have discussed it. However, it's not something that we're pursuing actively at the moment. For the most part, it's it's the social media stuff that we're really pushing, and you know, Twitter, Facebook,
sure,
you know, stuff like that.
Okay, very well said. So, and you know, you, as we touched upon before, you're doing that very well. I mean, like I said, there's a whole new face to the ICBA. And I'm not just talking about you as being their newest executive director, but we now have a connection to the ICBA, whereas prior to this, we didn't necessarily have that,
right,
for a variety of reasons. So,
yeah, I mean, I've been personally making it a point to reach out to people and try to establish a connection with the bowling community. I want to make sure that they know that the ICBA is here for them. We're here to work together and to promote the game. And, you know, I want them to know that we're accessible. And if they need anything, if they have any questions, anything at all, you know, just, you know, email me, Facebook me, call me. All the information's right on our website.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really trying to make an effort to reach out to the bowlers.
Okay, very good. So we'll move on to our next question. This is from a bowler that we're all familiar with, but we'll keep him anonymous. Where has all the money collected by the ICBA gone? Every dime should go to getting Saturday Candlepin back on the air. This show was the only reason that Candlepin Bowling survived. The game is slowly dying, lanes are empty, and the kids' programs are getting smaller by the year. Whatever the ICBA has done to this point has not worked.
I think that's sort of, I mean, we touched on this a little bit earlier. Candlepin Bowling isn't dying because of the TV show not being on the air. Candlepin Bowling is, it's shifting. It's changing. I mean, bowling in general is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this earlier, how, you know, people are more interested in the entertainment aspect right now, where they want to just go out and party and throw a few balls. That's nationwide. That's going on all across the nation. I believe the Candlepin TV show was sort of fading in popularity, mostly because people are losing interest in bowling as a sport, and they're not interested in watching it as a sport. So if your viewership is down and the participants are down, that will lead to a show failing. That being said, we have tossed around the idea of starting a new show.
Well, that's great. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, it's just an idea right now,
sure,
but we've talked about starting a new show, possibly something that's more internet-based and streaming as opposed to on network TV.
Mm-hmm.
This would free up more money because if you invest a lot of money into production costs for TV, that's less money going back to the bowler for prize money, advertising, set design. I mean, you could have a really great show if you use that money towards the show itself instead of production time.
Right, of course.
You know, paying ESPN or whoever to air the show. And we could do it pretty easily just by streaming it, having our own website, putting it on YouTube, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's definitely something we've talked about.
Well, that's exciting.
I think one thing that isn't talked about enough is, and you touched upon it, Liz, is production costs.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't adjust inflation and you consider the amount of money it cost to have five going on for 38 years.
Yes.
And Channel 50 on for, I think, about 20 years, maybe a little bit more than that, because mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it started in 84 and went up to 05, 06. So, I mean, tens of thousands of dollars, not just in prize money, but the people that are paid to in production to keep the show going.
Yep.
So.
And then there's airtime.
Right.
Just paying
right.
just to be on the air.
Right.
Right. I mean, and give credit to Robbie Taylor in with New Gen getting it on NESN, because it's not cheap. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, the advertising and everything else. So, would it be great to see Candlepin Bowling on a larger stage on television? Of course. Does it need it in order to survive? I'm not so sure of that. It'll certainly help it, for sure. But there's a whole bunch of things that we can do to make things better.
If you have it on TV, that's great, on NESN or whatever. But that's only available to people who are purchasing cable.
Mm-hmm.
If you have it on air TV, like Channel 5 or 7 or 4, it's only to the people in this general area who are going to see it. I mean, they're not going to be broadcasting this in California. or well, right, Hawaii. Of course, yeah. But if you stream it on the internet, you know, someone in Japan could be watching this.
Yeah, it's available to the entire
exactly.
world.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so it's anyone can watch it, whether you have cable or not, as long as you have access to the internet. Even if you just have access through your smartphone, you could still watch it.
Absolutely.
You could be sitting on the bus on your way to work watching Candlepin Bowling.
As it should be.
Yes.
Well, that was the great selling point of NESN back in the 80s with Big Shot Bowling is that, you know, if you had a C-band or KU-band satellite dish, is that you could have someone in California watching. But now with the internet, there, you know.
There it is. It's available to everyone.
Right. The sky's the limit, or maybe even the stars.
It kind of makes it seem silly to pay that airtime fee when you could have a much broader audience and not have to pay that fee.
Well, right.
You could use that money towards, you know, our own show or our prize money or anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you spend it in production equipment and, you know, a very small cost it takes to do it, you know, if you're going to stream it live.
Yep.
You know, I mean, that's
almost no cost at all.
Right.
Really. So,
well, it's still a cost, but when you consider
it's nothing compared to the airtime.
Oh, big time. Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Especially nowadays.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, rights fees are just insane.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you for that answer. We have our next question. This is from someone I'm not familiar with, but that's okay. Thanks for listening. I've been an avid league bowler for 25 years. I bowled at many houses across New England during that time. It's apparent to me that when speaking with non-ICBA member houses and other league bowlers and many pro bowlers, that there's an overwhelmingly negative view regarding the ICBA. Have you heard of the USCBA and spoken to Mr. Chesterkov directly? I feel their ideas are exactly what the game needs. Therefore, what new initiatives has the ICBA done or taken to change this negative view, and will the ICBA be willing to work with this new organization? Well, had already spoken about this before.
Mentioned that. Yeah, I know Dave and I know Lynn, and we have sat down and talked a couple times. We are all on the same page, and Dave and Lynn are actually from the USCBA. They're actually very pro-ICBA. They're trying to support, you know, sanctioned houses. They think it's very important for houses to be sanctioned for the future of the game. And we are working on a program together right now. So for that bowlers incentive program. So, we're definitely willing to work together and we plan to. I mean, I don't know what else to say on that one.
Sure.
As to the negative view of the ICBA, I have noticed that. I've heard some negative things about the ICBA, a lot.
Okay, fair enough.
But I think it has to do with the fact that we haven't really been reaching out to people. You know, I'm making an effort now to do that. I want to make sure that people know what we do, why we're here, what we do for the bowlers, what we do for the bowling community, what we do for proprietors, how we can help them. You know, we're pro Candlepin Bowling, and that's really what we're all about. To be honest, the ICBA and the USCBA's views, they're very much in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty much all for the same exact thing, except that they're bowler focused and we're proprietor focused.
Okay.
We're mostly, ICBA is more of a business association for the proprietor, and the USCBA is more of a bowlers association. But other than that, our goals are aligned.
So, you know, according to the name, of course, of Mr. Chesterkov's organization, the USCBA, obviously this is indicating that it's a U.S. organization for U.S. bowlers. Where does Canada stand? I mean, in relation to ICBA and just in relation to Candlepin Bowling.
Canada's got some of the best Candlepin bowlers out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how you can argue that.
Sure.
They've been bowling it just as long as we have, and they're very much a part of the ICBA. We've got 9 Canadian houses right now, and that's growing. Actually, I'm going to be going up to Canada soon to visit them and talk to them. And, they participate in our tournaments and bowl in our events. And hopefully we'll have something up in Canada soon so our bowlers can go up there.
Great. So the Worlds this year are being held at Fredericton, or Kingswood, if I'm not mistaken. That's in Fredericton. Is that an ICBA house?
No, I don't believe
it's
so.
It's not. Okay. Well, I guess what I wanted to ask you as my own listener, does or should the ICBA have any involvement with the World Tournament? I mean,
I would love that.
Okay.
I want to see the World's Bowl out of sanctioned houses.
As do I. I think they should be. I don't even think it should be an option.
Let me tell you why.
That's my personal opinion. Please, I'm sure there's many reasons. You can tell me all of them.
The number one reason is because the World's has some of the best bowlers in the world.
Absolutely.
And if there's going to be a record broken, it will probably happen at the World's.
Right.
We want to see records broken. This is what we're here for. We're trying to, you know, sanction the game and make it a sport, a competitive sport, something that's exciting, and world records make it exciting. We can't break world records, or at least sanctioned world records, mm-hmm. if you're not bowling out of sanctioned houses. Let's all band together. Let's make this more fun, make it more competitive, make it sanctioned. You know, that way we're all playing on the same playing field here.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping someday we'll reach that point.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens.
That makes the most sense.
Well, yeah, of course.
You want to be on you mentioned the level playing field. If you have the best bowlers in the world, you're only going to have higher scores. There's going to be more focus, more attention on it. And why would you, I don't know. If I was someone that had that carried a big average like that and I throw a big number, yep. and... the best are watching.
Sure.
But just so you guys know, right now, all of the Canadian ICBA houses are Silver Star members, so they are not sanctioned in Canada at the moment.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Perhaps that's why there's the controversial flat gutters that we hear about. But,
that's only in some of them. There's a lot of houses up there that don't have that.
Yeah, I haven't been anywhere up in Canada to bowl, at least. Hopefully that'll be this November. But...
That brings up another point.
Okay.
I know there's some people out there who are pro flat gutter. I know there's a lot of people out there who are very opposed to flat gutters.
I raise my hand.
But this is what brought this to mind. If there's something that has to do with the game that you feel needs to be changed, like a rule or, something like gutters, whether flat gutter should be allowed or not, although this has been brought up in the past, but you can submit a rules change. So anyone who wants to submit a rules change can go to your local ICBA house and talk to the proprietor,
mm-hmm.
and they can represent you in submitting a rules change. All you need to do is submit it in writing, bring it to your proprietor. The proprietor can bring it to the ICBA level and speak on your behalf. And you could even go, with the proprietor as a guest and present the rules change to the board, and it can be taken upon review, and then they can vote on it. This is very much a democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
The future of bowling is in your hands. If you don't like something about candlepin bowling, then become part of the ICBA, step up and make a change.
And, to touch upon that, I was reading something online. I don't like to mention the name of the website. I pose a boycott on this website, but someone had mentioned something like this, and I think a question on that forum was
the foul line.
Well, foul line, and how frequently does the ICBA meet to review rules and entertain suggestions for changes?
So, if you want to submit a rules change, you need to do it by the April meeting. So before that,
okay.
Then what happens is we bring it to the April meeting. We say, look, here's a rules change that's been proposed. We give it to the rules committee to review. It's brought up under discussion. And then if it gets passed to be brought up to a vote, then they vote on it at the annual meeting, which is in June.
In June, right. Okay. Very good. And, I mean, how many rules? Well, it probably doesn't happen very often, but, rules do change. I mean, have there been any kind of major ones that you've noticed? Or?
The one that comes to mind is the one that my husband, Scott, brought forward, and they voted on it, and they actually changed the rule.
And what was that?
It was the rule where if you're taking a practice slide
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a ball in your hand, it used to be that if you slid over the foul line on the practice slide without a ball in your hand, it was still a foul and you lost, it was considered almost like you had a ball.
Right.
But he brought the rule up and said, you know, this isn't right. If you don't have a ball in your hand, you know, why is this considered a foul?
I'd agree. And that's interesting because part of the Friday Pro League rules, if you look at the rule sheet for that, it says all ICBA, you know, rules will be abided by except for this rule where, you know, the if you take a practice slide, it will be counted as a foul. So I guess that can now be stricken from the Friday Pro League rules because it's now a
rule.
Well,
this was changed years ago.
Oh, so, okay. Okay.
Scott, do you remember what year they changed that?
2009.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Does the same thing apply if, you know, you're checking, you know, you throw your first ball, doesn't matter what's left. But, I mean, how many guys have walked up to the line, you know, to get a better look at the wood?
Yeah, to assess the
right, shot. Exactly. And they always have a ball. And I've thought, why not, is there a rule in place if you don't have a ball? What happens if you go over the line, is that counted as a foul?
With no ball in your hand?
Right.
No.
Very good.
Well, that's a good answer.
I know it.
You know,
I thought it was a good question.
It's a great question.
I should get, I don't know.
I mean, well, the other thing is, if you're bowling in a tournament and they've got foul lines, like foul lights and buzzers, you need to make sure that works.
Well, of course, yeah.
I mean, what if you're on a lane where it doesn't work? Then all of a sudden your score won't be valid if you break a record.
Mm. Right.
So in that case, if you're saying that if a buzzer or light is functioning, and on the second ball or even the third ball, a bowler is assessing his shot, his or her shot, and trips the buzzer. That's not a foul?
That would be a foul.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that would, if they're in the middle of their box.
Right, right. That's what
Kyle
was
asking.
It's
not a practice slide.
Right.
Not a practice slide, but he's up, you know, up just touching the line, you know, assessing the wood
situation. If it's in the middle of their box, it's going to be a foul.
Yeah, okay.
But on a practice slide, you know, before they start bowling,
right,
that's different.
Right. Okay.
Is it incumbent upon the bowler at a sanctioned event to ask the proprietor to make sure that the light is on before bowling? I mean, one would think that if it is, that they would be on and it's not an issue, light, buzzer, what have you.
I mean, you got to think of it this way. Is the proprietor hosting the event, or is this an event that the bowler is holding at the house?
Right.
If it's an event the bowler is holding at the house, like let's say you organized a tournament.
Such as the Pro Series or something.
Or a league.
Yep, yep.
Then it would be up to the tournament or the league to tell the proprietor, we want this to be sanctioned. We want to be able to break records in this, you know, turn on the lights. You know, we want to play by ICBA rules. Mm-hmm. That way, if somebody breaks a record, we can make sure it gets sanctioned.
Right.
I mean, it gets recognized. If you don't speak up and you don't have those lights turned on and you don't have a foul line judge, you're not going to be qualified to be recognized for a world record.
Okay. Okay. Well, speaking of rules, that we have a couple of we have a couple of rules questions. So, first one, this comes from a bowler up in Maine. It reads as follows. After your first bonus ball on a spare, there's interference or mechanical malfunction, which allows you to reset and bowl your entire box over. So that's this listener's example. He's asking, though, you know, he's saying you keep your fill. However, what if you had a strike and did this? So if you had a strike, what if you had only rolled the first of two bonus balls on a strike when this happens? Shouldn't you at least have the option to take what you already had knocked down as your fill before you re-bowl your box?
Well, as the rule reads right now, that's not an option.
Okay.
You would have to re-bowl.
So
unless your fill was completed. So if you had already rolled your two balls for your fill, then you could keep your fill and re-bowl the box.
Okay. So I guess this question probably comes up because of automatic scoring is my guess. You know, there's a certain system. Malden has it. Woburn has it. Lita Lanes has it. Where
Sunnyside.
Sunnyside's had, they have Cubica.
I think you have to press to confirm at Sunnyside, right?
Oh, I don't know either. It's been a while.
Well,
some systems, they have a press to confirm that your box is done button. So
yeah.
it doesn't clear the pins till you tell it's okay.
Till you tell it to, right. So what he's asking is, say you were to roll your first of two bonus balls in a strike, and for whatever reason, the system malfunctions, and the pin sweep drops, clears the pins, and sets a new rack. He's asking, you know, shouldn't, say you throw a nine drop in that first ball, shouldn't you have
Right.
The chance. So
the way the rule reads right now, mm-hmm. the answer is no.
Okay. Okay.
However, this is a perfect example of, you know, if you feel there should be a rules change and you feel there's a rule that is unjust or needs to be looked at, you can submit a rules change. Just okay. do it in writing, you know, write it out nice, type it up, bring it to your local ICBA proprietor, and they can, you know, bring it to the ICBA's attention on your behalf and submit it as a rules change. And this is something that can go in and be reviewed by the rules committee. It can be brought up for discussion at the ICBA board meeting, and we'll kick it around and talk about it, the pros and cons and everything. And if everyone agrees with you and says, yeah, that's a little bit ridiculous, let's change it, then it will be brought up to be voted on at the annual meeting. And you could possibly have changed the history of candlepin bowling.
Well, there you go. And I can certainly see this listener's point of view, because theoretically, if you were to throw a strike and then, like I said, fill it with a nine on your first ball, and then the pin sweep falls and out of malfunction or something, you haven't completed your fill. So in that case, you'd have to re-roll
your
box, including the fill.
Yep.
So say you have thrown your two balls and filled the strike, and then on the third ball we have a malfunction. That's a different story.
That's a different story. You get to keep your fill.
You keep your fill. So I find it interesting, Kyle, that you could throw a fill of nine, and because of malfunction, which, you know, it's not the bowler's fault, you could go Worcester hole.
It's true.
End up with or you could end up with a nine fill, but a strike for the box.
Right.
Yep.
So. To our listeners out there, I certainly would advise to take Liz's advice and go to your local ICBA house, submit a petition for rules change. So,
well, it's not a petition.
Okay.
You would be submitting a request for a rules review or a rules change. So you would put it in writing. You want to explain to them why you feel this needs to be changed.
Sure.
And do it in writing, like a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And then have your local proprietor bring it to the ICBA's attention, where we will read the letter to the board meeting, and we will talk about it and discuss it, and hopefully it will go forward to the rules committee to be discussed, and then hopefully it will be brought up for a vote.
Okay. And maybe this can answer our final listener question. This comes from a bowler out Western Mass. A bit of a controversial topic, I think. I believe that the lob line is no longer needed in the game. What would it take to remove that rule?
Well, there you go. We were just talking about how to submit a rules change.
Now,
same thing.
Do you think that's something the ICB would consider, would be removing the lob line? That's a pretty integral rule, or at least it used to be. Maybe it's not.
To be honest, it has come up in discussion.
Okay.
It is something that a lot of people have strong feelings about, one way or the other way. It has been brought up for discussion, although it did not come up for an actual rules change, at least not while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people have talked about it, and we know that people are talking about it. If you want to formally submit that, then, you know, by all means, send in your letter, formally submit the rules change request, and then we will bring it up as a discussion, and we'll talk about it and, you know, see what happens after that. A lot of it depends on, you know, the general consensus of the board members that, you know, is this something that needs to be reviewed by the rules committee? Is this something we want to think about? You know, we've had some requests in the past that they don't really make it past the discussion phase. You know, but then there's other things like my husband Scott's rule that, you know, it made it all the way to the end and they got,
sure.
they passed it.
I myself favor or support the lob line rule. Kyle.
As do I. How do you feel about it personally?
Kyle's joking because I lob when I bowl.
Oh, okay. I see. I've heard a little bit about this, maybe pertaining to your high single. What is your high single?
It's 147.
Wow. Okay.
I wasn't lobbing at that time.
Says who? No, I'm kidding.
But I have been formally asked, you know, at state tournaments. You know, I remember one time when Jim Barber came up to me at Lucky Strike Lynn, and he was very nervous, and he said, Liz, you know, you really kind of got to keep the ball down.
Okay.
But, no, I think the lob line is good to have, personally.
Sure.
I mean, it just kind of, not only does it protect the equipment, but it kind of in my opinion, it keeps the spirit of the game. You know, you're supposed to be rolling the ball.
Right.
And if you take that lob line out, does it start to get to the point where people are just sort of chucking it down there and it's not really rolling anymore? And there's no rule to keep them rolling it if you take the lob line out.
Right, right. Yeah, I've heard arguments that now that a lot of houses are moving to synthetic lanes, that it's not really a rule that, if you know, it doesn't really serve a purpose anymore. I have to disagree with that. Just
well, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, you know, if you're looking at it solely as a way to protect the equipment and you've got mostly synthetic lanes, then yes, they're right.
Sure.
Synthetic lanes don't dent.
Right.
You know, you're not going to damage them by lobbing the ball. But, you know, if you think about it in the terms of what if people start throwing the ball? What if it becomes similar to softball? You know, now they're pitching it instead of rolling it.
Sure.
There's no lob line there to tell them, you know, it has to touch the lane before this point.
Sure.
I think it just needs to stay in. I mean, let's be frank about this, though. It's not something that's called anymore.
No, I mean, it's true.
You know, I mean, there aren't too many
forms.
Well,
it should be called.
Agreed, agreed. But it's, you know, leagues, tournaments, doesn't matter. I mean, it's just not something that...
If you bowl a record-breaking score and lobs were not called, you will not pass.
Right.
You won't get recognized.
So how then, if a lob wasn't actually thrown or committed, it's not going to be called, of course. So how
But you would have a lob line judge.
Okay.
So you need to have a lob line judge. If you don't, then you're not going to be qualified.
And I think that's what frustrates people mostly about this rule is all other fouls, I suppose, for lack of a better word, you know, foot fouls, any other types of foul like that. We have an automatic way. We have technology that is capable of calling that or alerting someone. With lob lines, it's a lot more difficult.
Well, I don't know. I think the technology's out there. If someone wants to develop an automatic lob line detector,
they could become an associate member of the ICBA.
They definitely could. Mm. but, you know, if you don't have foul lights, then you would have a foul line judge, one for every eight lanes. That's the rule. And someone would sit there and watch the foul line and make sure nobody's sliding over the line, and they'd call it if they did. And, you know, my advice to the bowlers on this is I hear a lot of stories about how people don't want to call out their friends. You know, he's foot fouling, but I don't want to call him out because I don't want to start a rift. Well, it shouldn't be left to the bowlers to call out each other.
Right.
You should have an independent third party sitting there on the foul line, and they don't have any qualms about calling out fouls because they're not your buddy.
Right. It's their job.
It's their job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the way it should be done. And that way you don't have any of those problems anymore. You know, just do it. Make it official. This is our foul line judge.
I think that's a great point. In that scenario, would not the proprietor be compensating that person?
I think that depends on the event. You know, if it's, like I said, if it's a league or a tournament that you set up yourself and you want to make sure that you're meeting all these requirements, you could yourself have your own foul line judge. Or if the proprietor wants to pay for it, that would be their prerogative. But if it's a league that's a house league, then it would be up to the proprietor. Or if it's a house tournament, it would be up to the proprietor. I mean, it really depends on what's happening and what the situation is.
Right.
So, Liz, are there any other types of memberships? Can bowlers themselves be members of the ICBA or anyone else for that matter?
Bowlers cannot.
Okay.
I would suggest going to the USCBA and become a member of them. Because that's sort of like the bowler's equivalent of the ICBA. The ICBA is for proprietors, and it's like an industry association. We have a membership level for proprietors and, you know, bowling centers, but we also have a membership level for industry partners. So, like, for example, Paramount Industries, they make the bowling balls and stuff like that. They're an associate member. JE Corp, which refinishes the lanes, they're an associate member. You know, people who have products or services for proprietors can become associate members.
Are there currently any other companies that make bowling balls, candlepin bowling balls?
Not that I know of. There used to be
a bunch of them.
Yeah, but I think right now it's Paramount.
Okay.
that's a fascinating part of the industry, I think.
Sure.
You know, the because he does a lot more than just manufacture the bowling
ball.
He's really good with the history of the game, too. I mean, he's basically like our historian. You know, he knows all the details and the facts from everything that happened in the past with candlepin bowling. So, you know, he'd be a great person to interview.
Well, I did have once my friend, our friend Rich and I had a great opportunity to interview him a few years back for the Everything Candlepin website. And he was just fascinating.
He is fascinating to talk to. Yeah. He really is.
And he's very receptive. I mean, he likes to talk about this stuff too.
He loves the sport. I mean, he's one of the biggest enthusiasts out there. If you've ever been to his office, it's like a mini museum.
It is.
He's got all sorts of candlepin artifacts and old ebonite boxes and things like that.
There's a video of him on YouTube doing an interview. I don't know who interviewed him specifically, but he starts out his interview by going over the different types of pins he has in his office.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I had seen that several times before meeting him, I didn't tell him to stop telling me what types of pins. I wanted to hear what he had to say. He was enthusiastic about it, and he pretty much said verbatim what he had said on the video, and I knew he was probably going to continue to do so, but I wasn't going to stop him. It was just a great experience to go down there and check out the facility.
And he has a map with a pin on it for every house.
Yeah.
And he's got different colored pins to indicate candlepin, duck pin. It's fascinating. You know, it's really a lot of cool stuff.
Sure. I'd love to get a glimpse of the manufacturing process, but
I'm pretty sure that's proprietary. Yeah, you're not going to be able to see that.
He wasn't very enthusiastic about that part. No, he's doing great things for the game. And I understand he just bought Park Place Lanes, his family did.
Bob Perella did. His son, Scott, is managing it.
Great.
And they're doing really well. And they just revamped their restaurant, and they have a new karaoke system in there, and they have a new menu. And they're starting to bring service to the lanes. So if you're bowling, you can order a drink or food right from your lane.
And see, this is the type of thing that candlepin houses need.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's the future.
Sure.
Maybe he'll be on the karaoke machine while you order the dinner from your lane, you know?
If we could get that on the podcast, I mean,
I know it. If I could hear him sing Mr. Roboto,
we'd be on the Nerdist.
I know it. You order your Michelob Dry.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
indeed. So, Liz, I think we're going to conclude here. I think you've done a fantastic job at making yourself available to the public of candlepin bowling. Unless there's anything else you have to say, we thank you very much for coming.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, if you'd ever like to come follow up, we're always open to have you.
Sure, and I hope everyone checks out candlepinbowling.com and follows us on Facebook. And if you have any questions or anything, feel free to reach out to me. I'll get right back to you.
Great. So there you have it. That's Liz Moore, new executive director of the ICBA. For my co-host, Kyle Bruce, my name is Frank Face. Thanks for listening to Alley Chat, and we'll catch you next time.